Here on the podcast today, we're going to be hearing 5 to 10 minute overviews of the first 6 books of the Bible. Welcome to the Youth Apologetics Training Podcast. Alright guys, welcome back. This is one of the old podcasts that Seth went ahead and spliced together. It's actually 6 different episodes, and the series back when I released it was was called Through the Bible in 5, and the idea was 5-minute podcasts, and in 5 minutes try to give the best, quickest, briefest overview of one book of the Bible. What's it about? What's going on in there? Now, as I progressed in this series, it became more and more of a joke to me because I could never pull it off in 5 minutes. And so it was more like through the Bible in 10 and sometimes even 15 minutes. But whatever. It still turned out good. There's some interesting content there. And if you've never read the Bible cover to cover, if there's still some books that you missed, or you just want to have a little review, this might be the series for you. This is going to be the first 6 books of the Bible: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Numbers. I think I just said those out of order. And Joshua. I always do that. I always get Numbers and Deuteronomy backwards. I know better, but it just flows out that way. Anyway, this is a series that I almost made it to the New Testament, and I never finished. So this, as I'm re-releasing this, as rather than 6 individual podcasts, but rather as one, I'm feeling convicted that I need to go back and jump back into this and finish the Through the Bible in 5 podcast series. I mean, come on. I'm about halfway. No, probably a little over halfway. And I don't think it would be too terribly hard to go ahead and finish this off and cap this series off. But anyway, here it is. The first 6 books of the Bible, Through the Bible in 5.
Hey, this is Michael Boehm, Youth Apologetics Training, where we teach parents and their young in the faith about apologetics and theology. And today we're going to start a new series on overviews of all the books of the Bible. We're going to spend a good 5 minutes on every single book of the Bible, one by one. We'll take just small sections of the Bible at a time and then switch to different sections or series, so that we don't get bogged down. It'll take forever to get through the Bible. We'll eventually get there. Today we're going to start with Genesis. So let's jump right in. Genesis, it was written somewhere around 1450 to 1410 BC. It was written by a guy named Moses. You guys might have heard of him. It wasn't Charleston Heston, as someone may believe, but it was actually Moses. Bad joke. Sorry, guys. Anyway, the region of the world that this was written in is in the Middle East. And the book of Genesis covers the history. The book of Genesis is a historical book, and it covers from the time of creation all the way up into about 1805 BC, around the time that Joseph was in leadership in Egypt. This is before the Exodus, the time of the Exodus, and that'll be the next book we cover. What's covered in the book of Genesis? Well, we have the creation of the heavens and the earth. I'm not going to get into creation and evolution today, and I can't wait to get into that. There's so much to talk about, and we most certainly will get into creation. In fact, I believe the next series we're going to go through will be a primer on creation and evolution. But for now, after creation, we have Adam and Eve and their descendants, Cain and Abel. And it goes on from there. Then Genesis covers the flood. Was the flood universal, as teachers like Hugh Ross say, where just a region of the planet was covered? Or was the flood universal, as in what teachers like Ken Ham and Eric Hovind say, where it is a worldwide flood, the entire earth being covered with water? What does science have to say about that? But forget science. What does the Bible say? After the flood, we have the repopulation of the earth. Then we have the incident at the Tower of Babel, where all the languages of the earth were birthed, and everybody was dispersed. Then we have the life of Abraham and Lot, and the Sodom and Gomorrah event. After that, we have the lives of Isaac and Rebekah. We have the story of Jacob and Esau. Then we have Jacob and his family line, where he and his four ladies, yeah, that's right, he had four, he had two wives and two handmaids that he produced children with, and he produced the 12 patriarchs, all of his sons that birthed basically the 12 tribes of Israel. At that point, we have all the sons ganging up on Joseph and throwing him into a pit and selling him off to a group of Ishmaelites. And the Ishmaelites ended up selling him to Potiphar. And he worked for Potiphar for a short period of time, where he became Potiphar's most trusted servant. And then there was an incident where Potiphar's wife tried to have a relationship with Joseph. And that didn't work out for Joseph because he was a righteous man. He did not want to do this thing to God. And Potiphar's wife set him up and made it look like Joseph was trying to have sport with her. And so Joseph ended up in prison for a time, and Joseph had a series of dreams, prophetic dreams that came true, and there came a point in time when the Pharaoh needed somebody to interpret a dream that he had, and Joseph got back out of this prison and ended up working for Pharaoh, where he ascended the ranks and became Pharaoh's right-hand man, kind of the second in command of Egypt. And that's where we pick up in the beginning of the book of Exodus. That is a very brief rundown of the book of Genesis. But again, we have a history from creation all the way up to the life of Joseph and going into Egypt, where we pick up in the book of Exodus. The book of Exodus. Let's have a look. Who wrote it? Just like the book of Genesis, Exodus is written by Moses. And it was written somewhere around the same time as Genesis, around 1450 to 410 BC. The book of Genesis covers a period of time in the wilderness from about 1526 BC to about 1375 BC. And the book of Exodus records the deliverance of the Hebrew people, soon to be the Jews of the future, the deliverance out of the hands of the Egyptians. Remember yesterday we were talking about the book of Genesis, and there was one of the sons of Jacob. His name is Joseph. All of his brothers sold him off to slavery. And he eventually ended up in Egypt, and because he was such a righteous man, in fact, the Bible doesn't say anything negative about him, he ascended the ranks in the Egyptian Empire and soon became Pharaoh's right-hand man. And, well, that was the end of the book of Genesis. Well, now, the book of Exodus is, I believe, about 400 years later, and it used to be that the Jews, or the Hebrews, as they were called back then, were a favored group of people amongst the Egyptians. That was no longer the case. The Egyptians no longer liked them. They had huge flocks of livestock, and there were millions of these Hebrews. And the Egyptians were afraid of them, and they were enslaving them and using them to build the gigantic structures that the Egyptians had, all their buildings and all their cities. They were using the Hebrews to build these cities. So Moses met God in a burning bush. God showed himself to Moses in the form of a burning bush and spoke to him and told him his plans to set the Hebrew people free from Egypt. He commanded Moses, and I'm doing this as quick as possible, guys. He had Moses go back to Pharaoh and tell him to let the Hebrew people go. And, of course, Pharaoh said no. And Moses, through a series of plagues, God used Moses. And what is a plague? It is well, there's a lot of definitions of plague, but as far as how it was used in this part of the Bible, they were judgments from God on the Egyptians to show the Egyptians that God was with the Hebrew people. Interestingly enough, and someday I'd like to get into this, who knows, each one of those 10 plagues targeted an Egyptian god. So as God went through these 10 plagues on Egypt, their 10 most favored gods were getting slammed, as in our God, the one true God, was showing the Egyptians that their gods were make-believe and that they were not all-powerful as the Hebrews' God was. So God goes through these 10 plagues, the last one being the death of the firstborn son in each family. This one was the devastating blow that caused Pharaoh to let the Hebrews go. And they escaped all right. And they left en masse, and they escaped into the wilderness. Their route, according to the Bible, took them across the Red Sea. And we'll get into this someday. It was definitely not the Red Sea marsh or swamplands. They actually crossed the Red Sea. The water parted, and by this time, Pharaoh had regained himself and was quite angry and sent a whole army after the Hebrews to have them taken back. And as the army crossed into the Red Sea, now, wow, the water is opening up and parting down the middle, and the Hebrews are just walking right across. There's a wall of water on each side of them going straight up into the sky. And then as the Pharaoh's army gets into that Red Sea, they're crossing through the same path as the Hebrews. As soon as those Hebrews, the last one, gets out of the water, the wall of water collapses and drowns Pharaoh's army. I know that's a little harsh, but this is a judgment of God. And this army was oppressing and doing harm to God's people. And God loves his people. The deliverance of the Hebrews from the Egyptians is an interesting shadow and type of salvation. What is a shadow and type? It is God's way of showing a picture through a story of another concept. And the Hebrews were being delivered from Egypt, which was a sinful place. It's similar to us as we are delivered from our sins, taken through the Red Sea, which is a picture of baptism, and to the other side, to a new land, which is similar to us being saved and being brought to a new time in life. It is so much deeper than that, and I just simply don't have time today to go into this. Someday, perhaps. It's amazing. There's probably a lot of teachings on Sermon Audio on this subject if you look for it. Nonetheless, the Hebrews escape, and Pharaoh's army is stopped, dead in their tracks, and drowned in the Red Sea. Is their armor and chariots still down there to this day? Some people think it is. In fact, some say they even have pictures of Pharaoh's golden four-spoked chariot wheels down there at the bottom of the Red Sea, along with rib cages, armor, and the like. I do not know if that's true or not. I've seen the pictures, and they are very interesting. And the people that say they've gone down there, there's a lot of debate on whether they're trustworthy or not. I would like to give them the benefit of the doubt, but I don't know them. So we'll leave it at that. Nonetheless, they got into the wilderness, and that is where Moses was given the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai, which we have found a scorched mountain, a mountain with the top of it scorched black from the fire of God when Moses went up there to get the Ten Commandments, and some other interesting things. I would like to do several podcasts on that. There is some great archaeology that was discovered there at Mount Sinai to show that this story is, in fact, true. The Bible is true, guys. Believe it or not, it is true. And we're going to show that with Youth Apologetics Training. Okay, and Moses delivers the Ten Commandments to the people, and that is pretty much towards the end of the book of Exodus. We're going to talk about Leviticus. What is Leviticus about, and how can we use it in our Christian walk? So anyway, the book of Leviticus is written by the author Moses. Again, Leviticus is the third book of the Bible. It covers events that happened somewhere around 1445 to 1444 BC. It was also written somewhere in that region of about 1445 BC. Now, the book of Leviticus, it covers mainly a bunch of subjects that people find a little dull, but it's actually quite fascinating. It covers things from describing the sacrificial system. In fact, I'll just give you a little quick run through. Chapters 1 through 7 talk about the sacrificial system. Chapters 8 through 10 talk about the services of the priests in the sanctuary. 11 to chapter 16 is the laws of impurities. And chapters 17 through 26 are about holiness. Chapter 27 is about gifts to the sanctuary. Now, how would this apply to Christians? There are a lot of laws that pertain to just Levites, and there are laws pertaining to normal Hebrews of the time, but all of this has shadows and types in the New Testament, shadows and types that were lived out in the life of Christ as well as through the work he did on the cross. Now, there are a lot of bizarre laws in the Old Testament, in Leviticus, that a lot of you guys have never heard before, and I'm not going to give you any examples of them, but there is a lot of stuff that the Hebrews had to do for God. And if we ever have the time, perhaps someday I will devote a study to Leviticus, because all of the laws that the priests had to partake in, and the people, they have a fulfillment in the life of Christ. It's really amazing. But moving on, let me give you a couple examples of some laws in the book of Leviticus. Chapter 19, verses 31, give no regard to mediums and familiar spirits. Do not seek after them to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. What is that saying? Do not seek after people who communicate with the dead. That's witchcraft. That is necromancy is what it's called in the Bible. That is something that pertains to nowadays, and we would do very good to avoid mediums and speaking to familiar spirits. Who are familiar spirits? Basically, Familiar spirits is attempting to speak to the dead or to demons, and we are not to do that. How about this one? This is Leviticus 20, verses 6. And the person who turns to a medium or familiar spirit to prostitute himself with them, I will set my face against that person and cut him off from his people. That's pretty serious stuff. Another thing that the book of Leviticus covers is the feasts that the Israelites, the Hebrews, would go through every single year. And these feasts are absolutely fascinating because every single one of them is prophetically speaking about the life and work of Jesus Christ. Some of them talk about his second coming and when he comes again to earth to make everything right that is wrong. And the other feasts, the spring feasts, talk about the first time he came. It's actually quite amazing. That is it for the book of Leviticus. That is Leviticus in 5 minutes. The book of Numbers is the fourth book of the Bible. The first five books of the Bible are often referred to as the Torah or the Pentateuch, depending on who you talk to. Today we're going to talk about Numbers. And Numbers is, for the most part, a historical book. It covers a lot of historical events. Soon after the book of the book of Exodus. So knowing the book of Exodus was the Israelites passing through the Red Sea and they made it to the Mount Sinai. Moses received the law, the Ten Commandments from God at the top of Mount Sinai. And that's pretty much what we pick up here in the book of Numbers. It starts off with a census. A census is where people are numbered. They're counted. And that's where we get the name of the book, Numbers. The people are first counted, and then they receive instructions on how basically they are to follow this cloud of a whirling cloud by day and fire by night. It was a bizarre time in the history of our planet. These Hebrews were actually following a big pillar of smoke and fire through the wilderness. And this pillar was God, basically the finger of God, leading them around, showing them where to camp and where to go. This same pillar led them to the Red Sea in the book of Exodus and then went behind them and prevented Pharaoh's army from crossing the Red Sea until they had gotten all the way across. Anyway, moving on, the book of Numbers has a lot of interesting highlights. As we move through the book, we hear some old familiar stories, well, familiar to some of us, of the first march from Sinai, the people complaining, they want meat, God sends them meat. God gets mad at them because they're constantly complaining against Moses and Aaron. There's some instructions on concerning offerings. They challenge Aaron's authority. That doesn't go well for the people. Then Miriam, who is Moses' wife, and Aaron die somewhere around chapter 20. And then, of course, we've got the crazy story of Balaam and Balak. Balak tried to curse the Hebrew nation that was moving into his territory, so he calls a sorcerer named Balaam to have him prophesy against the Hebrews. And Balaam just simply can't do it. But at one point, his donkey talks to him, and very bizarre. But guys, if you believe that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, well then he can cause a donkey to talk. It is definitely one of the strangest stories in the Bible by far, in my opinion. But it's true, and it did happen. And as we start in other apologetics teachings talking about the reasons why we can know that the Bible is the inspired word straight from God, this creator of the heavens and the earth, you'll see that the Bible can be trusted. And suddenly the story about a donkey talking does not seem as bizarre as some might think. And moving on, and finally, the book ends with a whole lot of different instructions, again, for the Hebrew people, about various things, offerings, inheritance, vows, and the like. And then it ends with instructions on how the Hebrews are to move into Canaan and how they're supposed to handle that situation. That is Numbers. Really, it's just another historical book in the Pentateuch or Torah. It's the fourth book of the Bible. And that is the book of Numbers in a nutshell and very quickly in 5 minutes. Fifth book of the Bible, Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is one of the first five books of the Bible. The first five books are often called the Pentateuch or the Torah. And today we're going to look a little closer at Deuteronomy and see what it has for us in 5 minutes. All right. Moses wrote the book of Deuteronomy as well. And this book takes place right at the end of the 38 years that the Hebrews wandered through the wilderness. Deuteronomy was written somewhere around 1400 BC, and the Hebrews had been wandering in the wilderness for 38 years. This was because they had refused to enter the land of Canaan. In the book of Numbers, there is a story that I didn't mention to you guys yesterday that I should have, where 12 spies were sent into this land of Canaan, which was soon to be Israel. And they went in there and they saw giants, these huge men, and they chickened out. They didn't know how to handle these guys. And only two of them came back and said, God is with us, we can take them. The other 10 basically said, we are like grasshoppers to these guys. They're going to chew us up and spit us out. And so because of that, God had punished the Hebrews for a time, for 38 years, until a new generation could rise up that had the faith in God to do this huge task of moving into the land of Canaan. So the backdrop of the book of Deuteronomy is they are now, after 38 years, camped on the eastern border of Canaan in the valley opposite Beth Peor in the uplands of Moab, overlooking Jericho and the plain of Jordan. And Moses is delivering his final commands and farewell addresses, as well as encouraging the Hebrews to follow God and his commands. The Ten Commandments are talked about yet again, given to the people again, and they are reminded of their mistakes and God's punishment or chastisements on them going through the wilderness. Moses does pass away at the end of the book, and there's some mourning for him. A new leader is raised up named Joshua. He's actually one of the 12 spies that was sent into Canaan the first time, and he was one of the two guys that came back and said, we can take these guys. So really quickly, here we go. Chapters 1 through 4, we have Moses's first message to the people. It is remembering the things that they've been through and calling the people to obedience to God. Chapters 4 through 26, we have the Ten Commandments given once again and explained. Also the ceremonial laws, the civil laws, criminal laws, and social laws that Moses wants, or rather God wants these people to follow. Chapters 27 through 30, we have another message from Moses, and this is an interesting message concerning blessings and cursings, and the blessings of God when you are within his will and you are doing the things he wants you to do, and this will preach, and the cursings when you are not in God's will and you're doing things that you know he doesn't want you to do. I certainly have experienced some of the chastisements or curses from the Lord as I was younger and was doing some pretty silly stuff. And even nowadays, there are times when God has to straighten me up a little bit. On the other hand, when you follow the Lord and you do what he wants, not only are you absolutely happy in life because you know that you're following after the Lord and you are in a right relationship with him, but he just seems to bless you all the time. And this not always is the blessings monetary, like money or good health, and you're going to have hardships in life, but you know God is with you and things are really cool. Moving on, chapters 31 through 34 are Moses' final words and his death. Moses gives his last blessing to Israel, and he names his successor, which is Joshua. And then the book closes with Moses dying on Mount Nebo. And that is the end of the book of Deuteronomy, the book of Joshua. Joshua is loaded with interesting historical accounts of battles. It's a fun book to read, especially for a guy. Yay. Okay, so it takes place after the Israelites had been in the wilderness for that whole time of wandering, the 40 years. Moses dies at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, and this is where we pick up at the beginning of the book of Joshua. Joshua is appointed the leader, and their mission is to go into the land of Canaan. And whenever you hear about the land of Canaan, especially back in the times of Joshua, that's the promised land. That is the land that God gave to the Israelites, well, soon to be Israelites, they're called the Hebrews here, to take that land and fill it and live righteously in that land. So, when did it take place? The conquest of the land of Canaan started sometime around 1406. The writing of the book of Joshua was at the very end of Joshua's life. In fact, Joshua was the author of most of the book of Joshua, but at the very end, we suspect that the priest Phinehas, who was the high priest at that time, we suspect that Phinehas had actually finished the book of Joshua. Another really interesting note that I just find interesting is there were over 1 million people who had actually been part of that group who left Egypt. And out of over 1 million people, only Joshua and his buddy Caleb was the other guy that gave the good report when they went into the land as spies to see if they could conquer it. Out of over 1 million people, Joshua and Caleb were the only two people that were alive to actually be part of this party that entered into Canaan to take the land. Okay, so let's zoom through the book of Joshua really quick. All right, it starts off with the incident where Rahab the harlot protects a couple spies that come into her city, and she hides them in her house and lets them down in a basket over the wall. And then in return, when Joshua returns with his army to conquer the city, she gets spared. Her life gets spared. And the interesting thing, too, is she ends up being the relative of Boaz, who is the man that married Ruth, who is also a relative of King David, and ultimately is a relative of Jesus, which is kind of neat. So moving forward, we have the whole group, several million Hebrews, crossing the Jordan River. And it's similar to when Moses crosses the Red Sea. The river actually stops, and they walk across the river on dry land, and it just kind of mounds up the water as they're crossing. Like there's an invisible dam there. And they get across, and that's how they get across the Jordan River. It's a neat story. Continuing on, we have the story of Joshua and his army attacking the city of Jericho. Don't get me singing that silly song, Joshua fought the battle of Jericho. We're just going to be strong, and we're going to keep going. We have Achan's sin, which is the next story in line, where Achan, God told the Israelites, don't take any of their idols in your house, and don't take anything for yourself. Well, Achan did, and he got in a lot of trouble for that, and he brought a sin down upon the group. The lesson to be learned there is your sin not only affects you, but you're actually calling God's judgment down on your friends, your relatives, your loved ones, your city, your state, and your nation. It's a big deal when you sin. Every one of us is accountable for our own sin, but the spanking that God may bring upon all of us is because of your sin, so stop sinning. All right, let's keep going. I'm already taking too long, so I'm going to speed up a little bit. We have the Battle of Ai, which is also a famous story, and that's around Joshua chapter 8. We have Joshua attacking the southern kings in chapter 9. We have the incident where the sun stands still, chapter 10. Really cool story. Modern science has a big problem with this particular story, and there's an application for apologetics here where this is some apologetics is in order. Unfortunately, we don't have time to stop at this one. There's a lot of good explanations for how that happened, and eventually I will get into that. So let's move on. Chapter 11, Joshua attacks the northern kingdoms, or kings. And then around chapter 11 and 12, we kind of get a summary of exactly all the kings and kingdoms and what exactly happened as Joshua swept through the land. After that, starting in chapter 13, we have the land being divided up into the different kingdoms, or I'm sorry, the different tribes of Israel start taking over different parts of land. The interesting thing is the only tribe of Israel that didn't get their own land were the Levites. The Levites were the priests. And a thing to note here is basically all the land was theirs, but yet none of the land was theirs. There's an application there, too. If you seek it out, there's a sermon there. Let's move on. And so around chapter 22, we have another story where the tribe of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh build an altar to the Lord on the east side of the Jordan. And that stirs up some trouble. But it turns out they did it as not to perform sacrifices like the tabernacle and soon the temple, but rather as a memorial to remind people of where they came from. So let's move on. Chapter 23 and 24 is where things start winding down, and Joshua is at the end of his life. He gives his last commands to the leaders of the nation, and then he addresses the people. Joshua has led a very productive life, a very godly life. He made a mistake, though. He did not conquer all of the territory in the land of Canaan, and he left some people alive. And that was a problem. That created a problem because sin was still in their nation, and it was allowed. Sin's like a virus, and if you don't eradicate it completely out of your life, and I'm not talking about running around slaughtering people, but there's a prophetic picture in this book. If you don't eradicate all the sin out of your life, it'll find a way to creep back in, and it will infect you, and it'll come back, and a lot of times sin will infect you worse than you were in the beginning. Also, just on that note, a lot of atheists, the new atheists, like to bring up the battles in this book and the fact that God had the Israelites slaughtering the men, women, and children of these cities. And I'm going to get into that. That's something that absolutely is an apologetic subject. I've already gone way too long today, but I will be getting into that if I haven't already by the time you listen to this podcast. Well, having said that, that pretty much wraps up the book of Joshua. This is Michael Bohm, Youth Apologetics Training. Come out to the website and say hi, youthapologeticstraining.com. Also, you can visit me on Facebook. I'd love to talk to you guys and get to know you.
All right, we'll stop right there. Thanks for listening, friends. This has been Michael Bohm, Youth Apologetics Training. I love you guys, and we'll see you next week.